Hello, everyone, and welcome back to our virtual Mishnah Berurah here. We're holding in Mishnah Berurah Chelek Gimel. And in Mi'utz Hashem, today we will be learning Daf Kuf Dalet Amid Beis. Once again, I have to apologize for the fact that there is no video on today's share. Hopefully, very shortly, we will be back to our regular video share. Right now, for circumstances beyond my control, I cannot do video. So we're going to be learning Kuf Dalet Amid Beis. We're continuing to learn Hilchos Shabbos. We pick up today two lines off the bottom of Kuf Dalet Amid Aleph in the words of the Ramah, Aval Mutar Lirmoiz Loi Malacha Lasois Achar Shabbos. Our learning should be a schus for Achenu Kabeis Yisrael, Hanasuna Batsaru Bashivya, Haimdim Bein Bayom Ubein Bayabasha, Hamakim Yirachim Aleihem, Vyetziyem Yitzara Lirvacha Meafela La'ira Mishibud La'gu'ula, Hashto Bagolo Vizman Kariv in Amar Amein. Our learning should be a schus refuah shalema from Ashemer ben Esther Fradel, Yitzchak ben Tzion ben Dusha, Rivka bas Shirelea, Chava Hadassa bas Serol, and they should have a refuah shalema b'sar shar chile Yisrael. Our learning should also be a schus for Yonasan ben Michal and Yoel ben Michal. The Rebbeinu Shalom should watch over them together with all of our other brothers and sisters who find themselves in harm's way. B'chol makom shehem. So yesterday, here in Simon Shin Zayin Sif Chaf Beis, we learned that anything that's usher to say to an Eina Yehudi, because it is considered Amira La'akum, so anytime you're not allowed to instruct an Eina Yehudi to do something, you're also not allowed to use any kind of non-verbal remiza, any kind of hinting. So like the case that I gave yesterday was, you're not allowed to motion to the light switch to try to show the Eina Yehudi to turn on or turn off the light. Because that kind of remiza, a kind of non-verbal remiza that is going to, for sure, have the effect of instructing the Eina Yehudi what to do, that is considered Amira La'akum. Even though you're not using an actual Amira, that kind of direct nonverbal remiza is also considered Amira, and it is usher under Amira La'akum. We spoke in Mishnah Berurah Katan Ayin Vav, we spoke about the very complex topic of remiza shaloi bederech tzivui, of using verbal remiza, using a spoken hint where you don't give any instruction, you don't tell the Eina Yehudi what you want him to do, and you also don't make any specific mention of the malacha that you want accomplished. So the examples that we gave were, you're sitting in a room and it's not very well lit and you're trying to be Marvis Sedra, and you just say, oh, it's so hard to read because it's so dark in here. You didn't give any instruction to the Eina Yehudi. You didn't mention having a light turned on. You didn't mention any malacha at all. However, the Eina Yehudi that's there may pick up on what you just said and realize that for you it's Shabbos and you can't turn on a light, and he may get up and he may go turn on the light. And we said that in many cases that would be mutter. Of course, as we mentioned yesterday, this is a very complex area of halacha, and when somebody is faced with such a shaila, he should ask his rav for a psak. We also mentioned that people make a mistake. They think that they could call an Eina Yehudi to their house to ask them to do something, and then go ahead and use remiza shaloi b'derech tzivui. The problem is, just the very fact that you called the Eina Yehudi to your house, that already is considered tzivui, so that doesn't really work. Okay, so we covered that yesterday. Now, moving along in the Ramah, two lines off the bottom says the Ramah. Aval, however, mutter lirmois loy malacha lasois achar Shabbos. You're allowed to use even verbal remiza to an Eina Yehudi that you want him to do malacha that is usher on Shabbos after Shabbos. And he brings this down from the Or HaZeruah. Now, if you take a look at the Or HaZeruah is talking about a scenario that we really discussed earlier. And that is, let's say you have a sewer backup in your basement, and you're walking home from shul Shabbos afternoon, and you pass by your friendly Eina Yehudi plumber, Tony, who's the guy who you would call to take care of your backup. You could look at him and you could say, do you think you might be able to see your way to come to me tonight? So you're giving him a remiza, you're speaking to him, and you're saying something to him which is going to make him understand that he needs to come to your house to do a job on Matzi Shabbos. To do this is mutter, says the Ramah. Now, why is it mutter? So again, this is one of these cases where you just have to do the math, and when you do the math, you realize why it's mutter. Why exactly should it be aser? Are you going to say that it's aser because of Amira La'akum? Where is there Amira La'akum here? Remember, the golden rule of Amira La'akum is anything that a Yid is not allowed to do on Shabbos, he's not allowed to instruct an Ein Yehudi to do it on Shabbos. But that's not what's happening over here. What the Yisrael is doing is he's hinting to the Ein Yehudi that he wants the Ein Yehudi to do malacha after Shabbos. Now, the Yisrael is also allowed to do malacha after Shabbos. So he's not hinting to the Ein Yehudi about something, to do something on Shabbos that he's not allowed to do on Shabbos. He's hinting to the Ein Yehudi to do something after Shabbos. So there's no Amira La'akum problem here. What problem could there theoretically be? There could be a problem of Mimtzoi Cheftzecha V'Dabre Dovar. The problem could be that Mimtzoi Cheftzecha V'Dabre Dovar, you're discussing on Shabbos doing something that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos, doing it after Shabbos. Well, that's a problem of Dabre Dovar. But over here, there's no problem of Dabre Dovar because you're not straight out talking about doing the malacha. We learned earlier, you would not be able to tell Tony, listen, Tony, I need you to come to me after Shabbos and work with me to clear up my plumbing problem in my basement. That you're not allowed to do, because then you're discussing on Shabbos something that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos that you want to do after Shabbos. That's a violation of Dabre Dovar. But in our scenario, you're not doing that. You're just looking at Tony and you're saying, look, do you think you could see your way to coming and working with me tonight? So you're not discussing doing anything. You're not discussing the malacha. And again, you're not doing Amira La'akum because you're not telling him to do something on Shabbos that you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. So that's why the Ramah says in the name of the Ar Zeruah that this would be mutter. Continuing on in the words of the Ramah. Einam Yehudim ha-mevim tfuah b'Shabbos li-Yisrael shachayavim lehem. You have an Ein Yehudi who is a farmer. So let's say this Ein Yehudi grows grain, he grows wheat, and then he mills the wheat into flour. And you have a Yisrael who's a baker, and the baker needs the milled flour. And the Yiddish baker has a business contract with the wheat provider. And he paid him $5,000 for a flour. So now Tony, the Ein Yehudi, owes the Yisrael, Reuven the Yisrael, $5,000 worth of flour. Okay, Tony comes to make the delivery on Shabbos. All right, says the Ramah. Einam Yehudim hamevim tfua b'Shabbos liYisrael shechayavim lehem. You have an Ein Yehudi who's bringing tfua, he's bringing produce on Shabbos to a Yid that he owes the produce to. Okay, so now he comes and he knocks on the Yisrael's door on Shabbos afternoon, and he says, okay, I got my truck outside. I owe you $5,000 worth of flour. I have my flour truck outside. I want to make the flour delivery. All right, the Yid looks, and the Yid says, look, for me, it's my Shabbos. I can't have anything to do with this. But he wants to give Tony his keys. Here's my keys. The warehouse is out back. Go unlock the door and do what you got to do. So says the Ramah. V'Yisrael noisen lo maftechai lo itzarei. The Yisrael wants to give the Ein Yehudi the keys to the warehouse. V'Ein Yehudi noisnai l'sham. The Ein Yehudi is going to go. He's going to bring his flour to the Yid's warehouse. And now he's going to set up shop in the Yid's warehouse. U'moydedim. He's going to weigh out the flour. Umoinim, and he's going to count maybe the number of sacks of flour. So you hear what's happening over here? Tony, the Ein Yehudi, owes Reuven the Yisrael $5,000 worth of flour. He's coming to make the delivery Shabbos afternoon. Reuven gets up from his chalent and tells Tony, look, here's the keys to the warehouse. Go do what you got to do. Tony goes to the warehouse, unlocks the warehouse. He unloads his scales. He unloads his adding machines. He unloads his sacks. He pulls up the truck. He starts scooping out flour, filling up sacks, weighing sacks, stacking them up, counting the number of sacks. He's got a whole operation over here. But what's the goal of the operation? The goal of the operation is for Tony to give Reuven the flour that he owes him. Says the Ramah, Yesh mi shemater, there are those that say that this is permissible. Why? Mishum de'eni Yehudi b'meleches atzmai oisek. Because the Eini Yehudi, everything that he's doing for himself. He's doing it with his own flour. He's doing it with his own scales. He's doing it for his own purposes. The Einoi shel Yisrael, and the flour does not belong to the Yisrael, ad achar hamedida, until after he finishes making all of the measurements. V'sheyachshiv imay achakach. So what Tony is doing is, he's taking his flour, yes, he owes flour to Reuven, but right now it's his flour. So he's bringing his flour, he's weighing his flour, he's bagging up his flour, he's stacking up his flour in Reuven's warehouse, and they're not going to become Reuven's until after the whole operation is finished. And on Sunday or on Monday, Tony is going to call Reuven and he's going to make a final reckoning with him. He's going to tell him, I stacked up 200 sacks of flour in warehouse number 2 against the right-hand wall. So everything that Tony is doing right now is all considered meleches atzmai. Okay. Says the Mishnah Berurah here on Kuf Dalet Amud Beis, Ois Katnayin Zayin. But meleches atzmai, everything Tony is doing is considered to be doing his own melacha. Aval im hatfuah shel Yisrael. But if the produce already belonged to the Yid, also loymar le'ein Yehudi lefanoisai, you wouldn't be able to tell the Ein Yehudi, go. In other words, let's say the opposite case. Let's say Reuven already sold the produce to Tony, and now Tony comes on Shabbos to pick it up. Well, in that case, Reuven cannot give the keys to Tony and tell Tony, look, your grain is in silo number 3. Here are the keys. Go take it and unload it. That you can't do, because right now it still belongs to, What he was saying is, Avalam Atfuah Shel Yisrael. Right. Right now, all of the produce still belongs to Reuven. And what he's doing is, he's allowing Tony to come pick it up. That he's not allowed to do. For hu adin b'chol davar amukta, the heavenly shvus to shvus. The same thing would be true. Any item that's mukta, you wouldn't be allowed to allow the Ein Yehudi to pick it up, even though it's a double derabanan, even though it's a shvus to shvus, because you're giving an instruction to the Ein Yehudi, so that's a mira la'akum, that's derabanan number 1. And what are you telling him to do? You're telling him to handle something that's mukta. Mukta is also derabanan. So even though this is a shvus to shvus, it's still aser. You know why? Ve'in mutter kiyim lutzerich mitzvah iktsas chayli v'chanal b'sif hey. Because even a shvus to shvus is only mutter when it's a tzarech mitzvah, when it's a tzarech harbe, like a hefsid merubah, or when we're talking about b'makom chayli, where somebody is ill. But without those mitigating circumstances, a shvus to shvus remains aser. Says the Mishnah in the brackets, he brings this down from the Magen Avram. V'tazah kamam b'sim shen chesef katan zayin chelik al zeh. The Taz disagrees. V'tazah liyarab ka Magen Avram. V'ayin b'pri begadah ma'asha kasav oydei zeh. V'ma'asha kasavdu b'simin reish ayin tesef tal b'hagah b'mishnah berura. Oif katan ayin ches. In the Ramah's case, the Ramah said it's mutter to allow the Ein Yehudi to unload his produce, his flour, his grain into Reuven's warehouse. Why? Because it doesn't belong to Reuven until after Tony's whole operation is done and until after they make a final reckoning after Shabbos. What the Ramah means to say is, Kaidim Hamadida Vahacheshbin, before Tony weighs out everything and counts out everything, and until they make a reckoning, Einam Shaloi, it does not yet belong to the Israel. Another case, says the Mishnah Berurah, Eino Yehudi Shehivi Chafotzav B'Shabbos L'Beis Yisrael. If an Eino Yehudi brings his wares to the house of a Yid, Afilu Heim Asur B'Tiltel, Ve'Aviyam B'Shvil Yisrael, even if the wares that he's bringing are mukta items, and he is bringing them on behalf of the Yid, Kevin Shehem B'Yadu Eino Yehudi, Rashoi Loimar L'Fanoisad La'Eza Mokim Sheyirtse, he could tell him to put them wherever he wants. Okay, let's close out the simon over here. One last piece here. Second line down in the Ramah. V'chein, Einam Yehudim Oisim Gvinois B'Shabbos. If Einam Yehudim are producing cheeses on Shabbos. Now, there's an Isser of Gvinas Akum. You're not allowed to use cheese that was made by an Einam Yehudi. Cheese that was produced by an Einam Yehudi without supervision of a Yid is a problem, because sometimes cheese would be produced in using the stomach cavities of trefa animals, which would render the cheese to be trefa. So therefore, cheese making needed supervision. So now, says the Ramah, V'chein Einam Yehudim Ha'oisim Gvinois B'Shabbos, if the Einam Yehudim are producing cheeses on Shabbos, V'ha'Yisrael Roya, and they have a mashgiach, they have a yid who's watching the cheese making. V'yikna oisam mimenu. And then later on, the yidden are going to purchase this cheese from the Einam Yehudim. D'mikom okoyim ha'Einam Yehudi adaita d'navshei ka'ovid. This is also mutter. There's no problem here of thinking that the Einam Yehudim are doing their work of making cheese, which could be an isser of boina. We don't have to worry that they're doing it. There's any kind of amira la'akum issue over here, because they're doing it for themselves. Adaita d'navshei ka'ovid. They're producing the cheese for their own benefit so that they should be able to sell it. V'afal pisha Yisrael oimid be'eder chaydesh ha'chashayim v'adaita b'lomachram li'Yisrael ka'ovid shari. Even if this is a special run for the Jews, and this whole run is being produced only so that it could be sold to Yisraelim, so you have a run that's going to last a month or two, and everybody realizes that this is a run that's for Yidden, it's still not a problem. It's still considered that the Nachri is doing it for his own purposes. Says the Mishmaray is cut nine ches, and I'm sorry, tes, Roya v'yikta, Ritzayna Loimar, the Afal Pisha Yisrael Oimid, Be'es Asiyas HaGevinois, even though the Yid is standing over there and supervising, I don't want to use the word supervising, he's watching. Even though the Yid is standing there and he's being a mashgiach, he's watching what's going on, Be'es Asiyas HaGevinois, U'Be'es Chalivas HaCholav, and during the milking of the cows, K'dei She'yuchal Achakach L'Knoisam Yimenu, you need the mashgiach to be doing this job, and to be watching the cheese making, and to be watching the milkings, in order so that the Yidin should be able to buy it. Afilu Haki Shari, this still remains mutter, and we don't look at it as if the Einam Yehudim are doing the malacha at the behest of the Yiddish Mashgiach. And we don't say that there's an Amir la'akum problem. The Be'esar Asiyah in Yehudi Adaitid and Avshei Ka'avad, because all of the manufacturing, all the production work is being done Adaitid and Avshei. The Nachram are doing it for themselves. This is their business. They're doing it for themselves. It's cut and paved. Adaitim Lamachram. V'afilu imayna Yehudi ena oisa ha'givino iskiyim b'Shabbos. Even if this ena Yehudi is only making the cheeses on Shabbos. Am I Yisrael mekabla b'choyvoy v'shim lo yekabla m'yafsil choyvoy. And for the Yid has a very strongly vested interest, because this is the way the Ein Yehudi is paying back a debt that he owes to the Yid. He owes money to the Yid. And the way he's paying back the debt is by producing these cheeses and paying him in cheese. So over here, you have an issue where the Ein Yehudi is only making the cheese on Shabbos, and the Yisrael has a very strongly vested interest in the Ein Yehudi producing the cheese on Shabbos, because this is the way the Yisrael is getting paid back the money that he owes him. Still, Shari, Debeis, Asiya, Hadayin, Heim, Shaloi, because while the cheese is being produced, it belongs to the Ein Yehudi, and this is considered Nachri Adaita Denavshei Ka'avad. And with that, we have concluded Simon Shin Zion. Now, going from Simon Shin Zion to Shin Ches is a major, major milestone. With Simon Shin Ches, we're going to embark on a topic that many of you have probably been eagerly awaiting. And that is the topic of Mukta, the very complex and often misunderstood topic of Mukta. So really, Shin Ches, Shin Tes, Shin Yud, Shin Yud Aleph, Shin Yud Beis, we're going to be spending a lot of time now on Mukta. It's a complex and fascinating topic, which we begin today, Simen Shin Ches, Dvarim Hamutarim V'Ha'asurim L'Taltal B'Shabbos, items that are permissible and items that are forbidden to manipulate, to handle on Shabbos. Ubay Nun Beis Se'ifim, and here we have 52 Se'ifim. So one comment that I want to make right away at the very beginning, and that is that if you note in the title over here of the Simen, the Mechaber says, Dvarim Hamutarim V'Asurim L'Taltal B'Shabbos. L'Taltal means to handle or to move. It does not mean to touch. B'Derech Klal, as a general rule, it is mutter to touch items that are mukta. Now, there are exceptions to that rule. There are exceptions, for example, if you have something that by the merest touch, you know that it's going to move, in that case, you're not allowed to touch it because touching it is akin to moving it. But as a general rule, what is usur when it comes to mukta is moving the mukta object, not touching the mukta object. And that right away is something that is misunderstood and something that a lot of people make a mistake with. Now, the Mishnah Berurah has an absolutely beautiful hakdama over here to this simen, and it's not only a hakdama to this simen, it's a hakdama in general to the topic of mukta. But before we embark on the Chavetz Chaim's hakdama, I want to give a little bit of a hakdama to the Chavetz Chaim's hakdama. We find a very interesting thing. The first thing that we have to wonder about mukta is what exactly is the origin of mukta. Nowhere in the Torah HaKadoshah, when the Torah HaKadoshah discusses Shabbos, do we find any mention of such a concept of mukta. What we know midaraisa about Shabbos is that Shabbos is a time for Shabbos. We have to rest. Laman yanuach, you need to rest. That means that there are malachas, there are labors that you're not allowed to do. And we know all about the lamites malachas. We have 39 main categories of malacha. We have discussions in the Gemara in various places in Shas. Exactly where do we learn them from? We paskin, we learn them out from the malachas hamishkan. Anything that was a malacha that was required to be done for the manufacturing of the Mishkan, for the running of the Mishkan, to do the things that you had to do in the Mishkan, those became one of the lamites malachas, one of the 39 main categories of labors that are prohibited to do on Shabbos. But where did this concept of mukta come from? That there are things that you're not allowed to handle, things that you're not allowed to move on Shabbos. That does not seem to be a daraisa, that seems to be a darabanan. Okay, now that we know that it's a Darabanan, when did it happen? How did it come about? Who made it? And the truth is that we have a very fascinating stira, a contradiction, between two different Gemaras in Shabbos. We have one very interesting Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Lamed Amud Beis. The Gemara talks about Shlomo HaMelech and David HaMelech. The Gemara tells us that David HaMelech died. David HaMelech was Nifter. And many of us know, yet from when we were children, that David HaMelech was Nifter on Shabbos afternoon. As a matter of fact, that's why the minig is that by Shabbos after Mincha, you don't say Good Shabbos. You meet somebody after Mincha on Shabbos, you don't say Good Shabbos. People say Aguten, people say other things, but you don't say Good Shabbos. You know why? Because Shabbos afternoon, Klal Yisrael suffered a calamity. David HaMelech died on Shabbos afternoon. The Gemara Laman of the Beis tells us that Shlomo HaMelech came to the Beis HaMedrash with a Shaila. What was it, Shaila? The Gemara says, Shalach Shlomo LeBei Medrasha. Shlomo HaMelech sent a Shaila to the Beis HaMedrash. The Shaila was as follows. Abba Meis. My father, David HaMelech, died. Umutol Bechama. And his body is laying outside in the sun. Uklavim Shel Beis Abba Re'evim, and the dogs of my father's household are hungry. So you have my father's body is laying out in the sun. The dogs are running around and the dogs are hungry. So we could fill in the blank. We realize what the problem is. And said Shlomo HaMelech, Ma'aseh, what should I do? Now, what Shlomo HaMelech's shaila was, we could all understand what his shaila was. His shaila was that a mace, a corpse, is muktzah. You're not allowed to handle a corpse on Shabbos. So Shlomo HaMelech was stuck. What's he supposed to do? No less a personage than David HaMelech is a mace, mutal bebezoyin, outside in the sun, and there are hungry dogs running around, and Shlomo HaMelech doesn't know what to do. How am I supposed to move him? Okay. Sholchulei, so they sent an answer from the Beis HaMedrash. Now, the truth is that the answer that they sent also needs a lot of explanation. I'm not going to explain it now, but as we go through Shin Ches, Shin Tes, Shin Yud, Shin Yudav, Shin Yud Beis, you'll understand already the answer to these riddles over here. But what they sent Shlomo HaMelech was, they said, Chatoich Nevela. The first thing that you should do is, you should take an animal, a dead animal, and you should cut it up into pieces, v'hanach lifnei aklovim, and give the dogs what to eat. So chop up some raw meat and throw it out to the dogs. So now the dogs will be taken care of, and you don't have to worry about the dogs, chas v'chalila, desecrating David HaMelech's body. Okay, so you solved one problem. But now what do you do with David HaMelech? So they said, v'avicha, and as far as your father's body, hanach alav kikar oitinoik, take a loaf of bread, or take a young child and put them on top of your father's body. So take a loaf of bread or take a baby and lay it on top of your father's body, v'tilteloi, and then you'll be allowed to move David HaMelech's body. Okay, like I said, I'm not going to go into all the details of this Gemara, but the reason I'm telling you this Gemara is for one major point. One thing is glaringly obvious from this Gemara, and that is that the dinim of muktzah already date back to the days of Shlomo HaMelech and David HaMelech. Because that's the whole basis for Shlomo HaMelech's question, that David HaMelech's body was muktzah. So already in the time of David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech, you already have muktzah. Now that's the Gemara on Lamed Amud Beis. But then we have another Gemara. We have a Gemara on Kuf Chaf Gimel. Kuf Chaf Gimel, let me just see if it's Kuf Chaf Gimel Amud Beis or Kuf Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph. Bear with me for 1 second. I'm thinking it's Amud Aleph, but let me see. Nope, must be Amud Beis. Looking it up here as we speak. Yeah, it's on Amud Beis. Kuf Chaf Gimel Amud Beis. The Gemara says as follows. Amar Reb Chanina. Reb Chanina said, Bimei Nechemya ben Chachalya. During the days of the Navi, Nechemya ben Chachalya. That's the Sefer in Navi Nechemya. That's named after the Navi Nechemya ben Chachalya. Nishnis Mishnazu. The halachas of Muktzah were taught during the days of Nechemya. Diksiv, like it says in the Pasuk, Bayamim Hahema, in those days, Nechemya said, Ra'isi b'Yehuda, I saw in Yehuda, by the Yidden, Darchim Gitois b'Shabbos, that they were pressing the vats of wine on Shabbos, Umivim Ha'aremois, and they were bringing in heaps of produce from the fields on Shabbos. So what Nechemya said was, he was traveling in Eretz Yisrael, and he saw desecration of Shabbos. He saw them pressing grapes. He saw them bringing in heaps of grain. And because Nechemya ben Chachalya saw this, he went ahead and he enacted the halachas of Muktzah. Now the problem is that we have a steer here. Nechemya ben Chachalya came much later than David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech. So exactly when did the halachas of Muktzah come out? Did they come out during the days of David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech? Did they come out during the days of Nechemya? So there are various ways that the Rishonim answer this stira. One of the primary answers that they give was that there were different types of Muktzah. And that is a topic that we're going to be going through in great detail. The different types of Muktzah that exist. And what the Rishonim say is that already in the time of David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech, there already was a very basic din of muktzah. Something that I've said over and over again since we began Chelek Gimel is you have to understand what the word muktzah means. The word muktzah means set aside. Something that is set aside from Shabbos use. Something that has absolutely no purpose on Shabbos. That's a very high level of muktzah. That item, etzim vavonim, sticks and stones. Sticks and stones don't have any inherent use. You go outside to your backyard and there's a rock in your backyard. You don't look outside in your backyard and say, wow, there are so many doorstops laying around in my backyard. No, a stone is not a doorstop. A stone could be used as a doorstop, but a stone is not something that has an inherent automatic use. It's a stone. A stick, yeah. There are a lot of things you can do with sticks. You could burn a stick. You could dig a hole with a stick. But a stick is not a tool. A stick is not automatically fuel. Not that you could use fuel on Shabbos. You can't use fuel on Shabbos anyway. So a stick is not something that has an inherent Shabbos use. Therefore, it is muktzah. It's set aside for use on Shabbos, and it's something that's also betiltel. Say the Rishonim, this concept already existed. This concept already dates back to the days of David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech. What did Nehemiah do? Nehemiah put in place a new level of muktzah. And that's the muktzah that could even apply to kelim. The muktzah that could even apply to utensils. The idea that a screwdriver, better yet, a hammer, the idea that a hammer is muktzah and is aser betiltel on Shabbos, a hammer is a keli. A hammer could be used to hammer open walnuts. Hammers have lots of uses that could be mutter on Shabbos. So they're not automatically totally set aside from Shabbos use. So the idea that there are even kalim that could be muktzah, and indeed, we're going to see, and if you look at the Gemaras and Shabbos, during the days of Nehemiah, the Isser of muktzah was an incredibly expansive Isser. Even things like chairs were sometimes muktzah in the days of Nehemiah. So Nehemiah, upon seeing Chil Shabbos being rampant in Klal Yisrael, enacted a very strict level of muktzah. Over time, they cut back from Nehemiah's level of muktzah and to what we have now as the dinim of muktzah. But here we have a general idea where we see that there was a high level of muktzah that dates back till at least David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech. There was a more broader, a more inclusive level of muktzah that was enacted in the days of Nehemiah. And then as the generations went on, the Chazal made changes to the halakas of muktzah. They actually enacted kulas. They made it more lenient than it was in the days of Nehemiah. That's also something that brings up a question, because we know the general rule is that when a Beis Din enacts a decree, in order to undo that decree, you need a bigger Beis Din. You need a more chash of a Beis Din than the Beis Din that enacted the decree. I don't think in later generations they had a bigger Beis Din than Nehemiah's Beis Din, but they were able to make kulas in Nehemiah's decree anyway. You know why? Because Nehemiah's decree was made in such a way. Nehemiah understood that he was making his very strict decree of muktzah only for his generation. It was put in place already then, the ability for future generations to cut it back if they saw fit. If they saw that Klal Yisrael would be keeping Shabbos on a higher level, they should be able to cut back on the Isurim of muktzah. Now, I'll take it one step further. Looking in the Aruch HaShulchan, in the Aruch HaShulchan's Hakdama to the topic of muktzah, the Aruch HaShulchan brings down a famous Ramban, where the Ramban suggests that the idea of muktzah, the idea of the Isurei Derabanan of muktzah, are actually rooted in a Daraisa. Now, I don't think the Ramban means that muktzah is Daraisa. I don't see anybody that suggests that according to the Ramban, the halachas of muktzah are Daraisa. But what the Ramban does say is that the Torah HaKadosha itself already hinted to the concept of Muktzah and gave it over to the Chachamim of every dar to go ahead and form and handle the halachas of Muktzah as they would see fit. And what the Ramban says is, it has to be that way. Because the Ramban says, if you look at Shabbos and you take away all of the Yisurei Derabbanan of Shabbos, you know what would happen? You would have no Shabbos at all. And I'll tell it to you the way the Ramban says it. So let's see. What's also on Shabbos? On Shabbos morning, can you come home and make yourself scrambled eggs for breakfast? No, you can't. Yisurei Daraisa. You're not allowed to cook on Shabbos. Well, wait a second. Hold it. The Yisurei Daraisa is only if you do it in absolutely the normal way. If you do it with a shinui, then already it's not also midaraisa. So you know what? I'll make scrambled eggs with a shinui. Okay, fine. So I'll make scrambled eggs with a shinui, and I had scrambled eggs for breakfast. All right. Am I allowed to go outside to my field and plow my field on Shabbos? No. Issa daraisa. Wanted to allow me to test malachas. Chayrish. Okay. But you know what I could do? I could go outside to my yard, and I could plow my field with a shinui. So I'll do it in some kind of weird way. I'll use a different tool. I'll use a different hand. I'll push it with my foot. But I'll do chayrish with a shinui. If I'm doing it with a shinui, it's only an issa d'rabbanan. So the Ramban goes along and the Ramban says, if you take away the issurei d'rabbanan on Shabbos, you're basically removing Shabbos. Because there's nothing that you can't do. Just do it with a shinui. There's absolutely nothing that you can't do on Shabbos. Just do it in a way that it's not issa d'rabbanan. So says the Ramban, you can't tell me that when the Torah HaKadosha put in the Aseres HaDibros, a whole thing about Shabbos, and you have Psukim and all over about Shabbos, and we know the Chaymer HaDavar about Shabbos, you can't tell me that the Torah created Shabbos in such a way that you could very easily circumvent all the halachas of Shabbos, and Shabbos could be a day like any other day of the week all the time. Can't be, says the Ramban. Therefore, the Ramban says, it is clear that the intent of the Torah HaKadosha was that there should eventually be Issurei D'Rabbanan that will govern what you can do and what you can't do on Shabbos. But the details were given over to the Chachamim. This is something that was Moser L'Chachamim. It was given over to the Chachamim to figure out and to enact and to make the Gzeiros and the Takanos as they see fit. Again, it's still a Darabanan. It's not a Daraisa. But it is rooted, the intent of the Daraisa was that these Darabanans would eventually come into play. Okay, against that lengthy backdrop, let's see the Mishtabrua's beautiful Hakdama here to Muktzah. Says the Mishtabrua, Hine, Kaidim Shedavar Simen Zeh Akdim Psicha Ketana. Before we begin this Simen, I'm going to give you a little introduction. Says the Chavetz Chaim, Hine Isser Tilpel Muktzah Shegadru Chazal, when it comes to the Isser of Muktzah. Now note, again, what does the Mishnah Berurah say? Isser Tilpel Muktzah. When it comes to the Isser of moving Muktzah, Shegadru Chazal, that Chazal were Geyser, Kasav HaRambam B'Seif Perek Chav Dalet Halacha Yud Beis through Yud Gimel, the Rambam writes in Perek Chav Dalet, Halachas Yud Beis, Yud Gimel, V'zeh L'Shaynai, and these are the Rambam's words. Asru chachamim l'taltel miktsas dvarim b'Shabbos. The chachamim asered moving certain items on Shabbos. Kederech shehu oisa b'choil. In the way that you would move them and use them during the week. U'mipnei ma nogu b'isser zeh. Why did the chachamim take upon themselves to create this isser of muktzah? Amru, they said. Uma im his hiru hanaviyim. If you see that the Nevi'im warned us, v'tzivu, and they commanded us, shelo yehei hiluchecha b'Shabbos ki hiluchecha b'chayil, right? We learned, it says in the pasuk in Yeshaya, im toshuv mi Shabbos raglecha asoyz chafatzecha b'yom kachi, right? If you restrain your feet because of Shabbos, and we learned that you're not supposed to walk on Shabbos the way you walk during the week. not allowed to run on Shabbos. So if Chazal told us that you can't even walk on Shabbos the way you walk during the week, and you can't talk on Shabbos the way you talk during the week, right? So if that's what the Nevi'im told us, that you can't walk on Shabbos the way you walk during the week, you can't talk on Shabbos the way you talk during the week, Kal v'chomer, it's a kal v'chomer, shelo yehi tiltel b'Shabbos k'tiltel b'chol. So certainly you can't handle everything that you can handle during the week on Shabbos, k'dei shelo yehi k'yom chol b'enov, so that Shabbos shouldn't be turned into a weekday. If everything on Shabbos is going to be the same as it is during the week, if you could go downstairs, imagine if on Shabbos afternoon, you could go downstairs to your basement, to your workshop, or to your garage, and you could organize all your tools. So you'll be handling your power tools, you'll be handling your hand tools, setting up your workshop. How could that be? You're turning Shabbos to a weekday. And not only that, you're going to be organizing your kelim, organizing your tools, or moving them from one house to another. Or you'll go outside to your backyard and you'll say, you know what, I'm going to be doing a building project soon and I need big rocks and small rocks. You'll go, you make piles of rocks so you could build yourself a garden wall. After all, Shabbos is a day off. You're not working. So it's a perfect day to organize the workshop. It's a perfect day to get your rocks ready to build your garden wall. So basically the Rambam is saying, you know why the Chazal enacted the halachas of Muktzah? Because we need to protect Shabbos. Because without the halachas of Muktzah, Shabbos is going to turn into an ordinary Tuesday. We're going to lose the whole thrust of what the Torah Kedoshah says. L'man yenuach. V'oid. And furthermore, says the Rambam, kishi yivakar v'yitaltal kelim shemalachtan l'isser. If you're going to be working in your workshop, and you're going to be organizing your tools, and the batteries, and their chargers, and your vice grips, and everything else, efshir shiyasasik behemat v'yavar l'idei melacha. You're going to pick up your drill, and you're going to say, oh, I remember I wanted to drill a hole in that thing. Oh, I have my impact driver. Yeah, I had a few screws upstairs that I needed tightening. And you're going to end up actually doing malacha. You're going to end up actually doing binyan or stira or whatever. Void. Also, the Rambam says, when it comes to Shabbos, not everybody is a craftsman. You have people that don't work every day, so to speak. Kigoyin, for example, hatayolin, right? Wagon drivers, a tayol, v'yoshvei kronos, or people that are pashut yoshvei kronos. I don't know what they live off, but they hang around on the street corners. Shekol yimeim heim shayfsim mimalacha. These people, if you're going to take away the isser of muktzah, and you're only going to apply the isurei daraisa of the lamites malachas, for people that don't have trades, for people that live a life of leisure, the Yisurei Darais of Shabbos aren't going to affect them so much. If you're a farmer, so yeah, the Yisurei Darais of Shabbos, on Shabbos I got to close up shop. I can't go out to my field to work on Shabbos. If I'm a shoemaker, I can't make shoes on Shabbos. If I'm a baker, I can't bake on Shabbos. But if I don't have a trade, if I'm a man of leisure, so none of these halachas apply to me. And then if you take away the Yisurim of Muktzah and all the things that you're allowed to do during the week, you're allowed to do on Shabbos, these people will not have a Shabbos. There'll be nothing about the way they comport themselves on Shabbos that will be automatically different than the way they comport themselves during the week. Therefore, shvisa b'dvarim elu. So, by following the halachas of muktzah, the yisurei derabbanan of Shabbos, he shvisa hashava b'chol adam. Now you're creating a shvisa that applies to everybody. Umipnei dvarim elu nagu b'isra tiltol. And it is for this reason that Chazal took upon themselves the immense complexities of the yisurim of tiltol muktzah. The asru. And they prohibited that you should only be able to handle on Shabbos kelim, utensils, hatzarich lahem, that have a specific Shabbos use. They have a specific use on Shabbos to do something that's mutter on Shabbos. Kimoy sheyisbar, as we're going to explain. Ad kan l'shoinai, that's the lashon of the Rambam. So the Rambam basically tells us, you know why the Chazal made Isurei Muktzah? They made Isurei Muktzah to protect Shabbos. They made Isurei Muktzah because they saw that the pasuk in Yeshaya says you can't walk and talk on Shabbos the way you would do during the week. So they understood that you can't act the way you would during the week on Shabbos. You can't handle all the things that you handle during the week on Shabbos. They also were afraid. If you're going to be able to handle all sorts of kelim on Shabbos, imagine if you were able to handle a screwdriver on Shabbos. You're going to end up going and putting in screws. So they wanted to protect Shabbos. Also, they wanted to create a Shabbos atmosphere where the atmosphere of Shabbos is going to apply to everybody, even to people who live a life of leisure all week. Continues the Mishnah Berurah. V'haravid noisit tamshu geder lo hitzah. Comes along the Ravid. The Ravid gives us another reason for the halachas of muktzah. It is to protect the av malacha of hitzah, of carrying. Shem natural atatal kaldavar, because if you're allowed to handle anything under the sun, the more kalim that you're able to handle on Shabbos, the more likely it is that you'll take something and you'll end up carrying it from one domain to another. Veda, and you should know, says the Mishnah Berurah. Demikan at Seif Shimon Yud Beis, from here on out till the end of Simon Shin Yud Beis, Nispa'er Arba Chalokim Mishal Muktzah, we will discuss primarily four different categories of Muktzah. Chelik Echad, the first category of Muktzah, is Muktzah Machmas Chisaron Kis, things that are Muktzah due to a fear of monetary loss. What does that mean? Dahainu. Kli Sha'adam Makbid Olav, a keli that a person would not handle for any other reason than for what it was specifically made for. And it was made for something that is not appropriate for Shabbos. So for example, we're going to see examples of that in the Mechaber. One example he's going to give is a shechita knife. You're not allowed to shecht on Shabbos. So a shechita knife doesn't have any use as a shechita knife on Shabbos. Now, you could use a shechita knife to cut your steak, but you wouldn't use your shechita knife to cut anything else. Now, I mean, actually, to use your shechita knife to cut a steak would be a problem because a shechita knife, we paskin, is a treifa knife, but we'll put that aside for a moment. You could use the shechita knife, theoretically, to cut anything that you're allowed to cut on Shabbos, but you wouldn't because a shechita knife is a highly specialized tool. It has to be kosher for shechita. It needs that incredibly sharp edge. So you would not use your shechita knife to cut anything else. So it is specifically a shechita knife. And as a shechita knife, it has no use on Shabbos. This is a primary example of muktzah machmas chisaron kis. You can't tell me that you're going to use this knife to cut something else. Because you wouldn't. Because you would be afraid of suffering a monetary loss by ruining your shechita knife. So that's the first category of muktzah. Chelik sheni, the second category of muktzah we're going to discuss. Davar she'ena keli, something that is not a utensil. It has no inherent use. V'loy michael adam, it's not a food for a person. V'loy michael behema, and it's not animal fodder. Kigoin, for example, avonim, stones. A stone is not a utensil. A stone can have 100 uses, but it's not a utensil. It's not a finished keli. It doesn't have an inherent use, and it's not a food item. The kanim, or reeds, or mois, or coins, the eitzim, or twigs, the kairos, or building beams, the afar, dirt, the choil, sand, umeis, a dead body, a corpse, ubalechayim, live animals, ugroigrois, dried figs that are in middle of the drying process, so they're not edible yet. Vitzimukim, or raisins in middle of the drying process. Shumunachim emakim shemis yavshim. They're laying out in the field where they were put out to dry, so they are now inedible. They're in middle of the drying process. All of these items that the Mishnah Berurah just named, they're not kalim, they're not food items, so they don't have a use for Shabbos. The chol kiyotzim is at the loy chazi. All such items that really do not have any kind of designated Shabbos use. They don't have an inherent use on Shabbos. Umikri muktza machmas gufay. These are things that I consider to be intrinsically muktza. Again, a rock, theoretically, has a lot of different things you could use it for. But a rock doesn't have a designated use on Shabbos. Twigs don't have designated uses on Shabbos. A fig that's in the middle of drying that's inedible doesn't have a Shabbos use. These are muktza machmas gufay. Kelk shlishi, the third category we're going to discuss is kli shemalachtoi l'isser besif gimel. A keli, a tool, a utensil, but it's something that's designated for a use that is usser on Shabbos. A very simple example is a screwdriver. A screwdriver is a building tool. It is a keli that has 1,000 uses, and from the 1,000 uses, there are many of them that could have a Shabbos use. But where are you going to find screwdrivers in Home Depot? It's a construction tool. That's what it is. It's a kli, it's a keli, shemalachtoi, whose designated use is le'isser, is for something that's prohibited on Shabbos. Those are muktza, and you're not allowed to move them or handle them only under certain exceptions, certain circumstances. Chelek Revi, the fourth category we're going to discuss, is kli shemalachta leheter. Sometimes you have a keli that's perfectly usable on Shabbos. Umunach alav davar muktza, but something that's muktza is sitting on top of it. Vafilu husru b'Shabbos. Even if the muktza item that's on top of the non-muktza item is removed on Shabbos, the bottom item is still muktza. This is what we call a basis. Kevin Chahaya alav ben Hashmashus, since it had something muktza on top of it during the twilight period ben Hashmashus when Shabbos came in, migui dis katzayla ben Hashmashus, once it was muktza during the ben Hashmashus period, is katzayla kula yuma, it remains muktza for the entirety of Shabbos. So those are the four categories that we're going to be discussing. Says the Mishnah, v'yesh oichtei chalokah muktza. In reality, there are two other categories of muktza. Echa davar shayi ben Hashmashus mechubar mechusar tzeda. One category of muktza would be, let's say, produce that was still attached to the ground during ben Hashmashus when Shabbos came in, or an animal that was not yet trapped when Shabbos came in. V'zei yispar b'hilchus yomtiv, that's discussed in hilchus yomtiv, not in hilchus Shabbos. Shenis muktza machmas mitzvah, then there's another kind of muktza that we have discussed at different times. And that is something that's muktza because it was set aside for mitzvah use. Kagain atzei sukkah v'noya, like the schach of your sukkah or the decorations of your sukkah. V'yisparim mirtzah Hashem b'hilchus sukkah. That topic is discussed in hilchus sukkah. U'bir dinam elu mikanat seif simen shin yod beis. We're going to be discussing all of these in greater detail from now through simen shin yod beis. Kein kasav beis Yosef. Now that we've given you a brief introduction to the four main categories of muktza, you will be able to understand as we move along what type of muktza we're dealing with in each halacha that we discuss. Okay, we're going to stop over here for now. We have, Baruch Hashem, embarked on our study of Hilchos Muktza. We should be zeicha to go through it, understand it, complete it in good health. We should be zeichet to see the B'ez Gael Tzedek, B'mehar V'yameinu. Amen. Be well.